Hello and welcome to the Chester and Flintshire Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 1st of May. This is Juliet Shestack. With today being May Day, the 1st of May, I wonder how many of you will be covering yourselves in flower garlands, taking a turn round the maypole, or joining in some Morris dancing perhaps. Country traditions that may have faded a little with time. A neighbour told me that celebrating May Day was always part of the calendar at primary school, about 60 years ago, when they were all taught the tricky art of maypole dancing. You can imagine the chaos. We do still, of course, get our May Day bank holiday on Monday, and in fact we saw some Morris dancers only a few weeks ago on a trip to Amsterdam, when I was surprised to see what I'd thought was a very English pursuit performed for tourists in Dam Square, at the very heart of the city. Then I looked a little closer at the wording on their costumes and saw they were actually a troupe from Leeds. It's a small world. Sunrise on Friday this week is at 5:39 a.m. with sunset at 8:38 p.m. And now on with the news. Pub helps fund vital treatment for Ellesmere Port girl with life-threatening allergies. An Ellesmere Port pub has helped fund vital treatment for a young girl with multiple food allergies. The Marstons Foundation, working alongside the Old Wirral Hundred pub in Ellesmere Port, where the youngster's grandmother Dawn is the licensee, stepped in with a £4,500 donation to enable her to begin treatment at the most effective stage. In 2024, Brodie, then aged 6, was diagnosed with multiple life-threatening nut allergies. Further testing confirmed the seriousness of her condition, and her family learned that an emerging course of treatment could significantly reduce the risk of a worst-case allergic reaction, but only if it began while Brodie was still young. Now her family is sharing their story during Allergen Awareness Week, after receiving vital support from the Marstons Foundation and their local community to help fund the life-saving treatment. Brodie's family first became aware of her allergies during lockdown, when an unexpected reaction left them frightened and unsure what was happening. Brodie's mum, Laura Cotherall-Jones, said, "We didn't know anything about allergies at all. Her reactions just kept coming. Peanuts, sesame, pistachio, walnuts, and with each one came more anxiety and fear. As a family, we were desperate to understand what options were available. We learned about this relatively new treatment, but it's not something older children or adults can have because it's too risky. We tried to fundraise locally, but when we got the phone call from the Marstons Foundation saying they would fund the treatment, it was incredible. It's genuinely changed her future." Since starting treatment, Brodie's allergy test results have improved significantly. While the family remains vigilant, carrying EpiPens and carefully checking food, doctors have told them the risk of a severe reaction has reduced by around 95%. "The freedom this will give her as she grows up is unbelievable," Laura added. "It's given us hope and peace of mind we never thought we'd have." Brodie's story is being shared as part of Marston's Allergen Awareness Week, which shines a light on the realities faced by millions of people across the UK living with food allergies, and the importance of understanding, care and vigilance when serving food. According to Allergy UK, more than 20% of the UK population is affected by at least one allergic condition, with hospital admissions for anaphylaxis having tripled since the late 1990s. Rebecca Southall, who leads the Marstons Foundation, which supports local causes in the communities where Marstons pubs operate, said, "Allergen awareness requires constant care, learning and empathy, and Brodie's story is a powerful reminder of why this matters so much. We were incredibly proud to support Brodie and her family. Seeing the difference this funding has made and the reassurance it has given them is exactly why the foundation exists." Brodie's family and the team at the Old Wirral Hundred hope that by sharing her journey, it will help build greater understanding of food allergies and reinforce the importance of taking them seriously, both within hospitality and the wider community.
Hello, this is Taj. Cheshire West and Chester Council welcomes hygiene fines. A Chester restaurant and a company director have been fined after pleading guilty to multiple food safety offences. The fine comes after an investigation and prosecution by Cheshire West and Chester Council's public protection and legal teams. The case was heard at Chester Magistrates Court, where Biryani Mama Chester Limited pleaded guilty to all offences. The company was fined £14,600 and ordered to pay costs of £1,190 with 2 months to pay. A company director, 37-year-old Nikita Menon, also pleaded guilty to all offences and was fined £320, ordered to pay a surcharge of £128 and costs of £1,190 with 2 months to pay. Environmental health officers first inspected the restaurant, located in City Road, Chester, on February 19, 2025, shortly after it was registered as a new food business. The inspection found the premises to be dirty throughout, with significant pest activity, including rats present in areas where open food was stored, alongside poor structural standards and inadequate cleaning practices. Officers identified conditions that presented a real risk to public health, including poor kitchen hygiene, unsafe food storage, inadequate temperature control, evidence of rodent activity, and unsatisfactory refuse storage outside the premises. Due to the seriousness of the conditions, officers were satisfied that an imminent health risk existed and the business was closed with immediate effect. Officers revisited the premises on February 21st, 2025, where some improvement was noted. However, ongoing evidence of rodent activity remained and permission to reopen was refused. A further inspection the next day found standards had improved sufficiently for the premises to reopen. At an interview under caution on April 3rd, 2025, Pranav Mekala, manager, accepted that the premises fell below legal food safety standards, had inadequate hygiene, cleaning, food storage, pest control and structural conditions, and were under limited oversight by the company's directors. Despite assurances that improvements had been made, a second full food hygiene inspection on April 30th, 2025, found standards had deteriorated again, including mouldy food, unsafe food temperatures, grease buildup, poor cleaning, and structural concerns in the cellar that continued to pose pest risks. In total, 8 separate offences were charged. Cabinet Member for Community Safety and Neighbourhood Pride Councillor Stuart Bingham said food safety is not optional. The serious and repeated failings uncovered in this case fell well below the legal standards the public has a right to expect. The presence of pests and unsafe food handling practices created an unacceptable risk. Our public protection teams work with businesses to help them comply, but where standards remain poor or warnings are ignored, we will take decisive enforcement action. Protecting public health will always be our priority.
Chester MP visits new school building for King's Moat project. Chester MP Aoife Brandreth joined representatives from Sandstone Trust, Cheshire West and Cheshire Council and Wynn Construction for a look inside the new King's Moat Community Primary School. The MP for Chester South and Eddisbury attended the site on Friday, April the 24th for a first glimpse inside the almost finished school building, which remains on track to open its doors to pupils this September. Built at the heart of King's Moat Garden Village, a new community of around 1,300 homes on the southern edge of Chester, the school will be close to new playing fields, 3G pitches and a public park, supporting the growing neighbourhood. The school will be delivered in 2 phases. Phase 1 will provide a one-form entry school for 210 pupils, together with ancillary facilities such as the hall, kitchen and dining areas, designed to accommodate a future one-and-a-half-form entry, 315 pupils. This phase is scheduled to open in September 2026. Phase 2 will be implemented once pupil numbers indicate the need for expansion and will deliver the additional accommodation required for a further half-form entry, equating to 105 additional pupil places. King's Moat Community Primary School will initially open at 0.5 form entry for reception and Key Stage 1 pupils in September 2026. The published admission number will be restricted at opening and will increase incrementally in line with housing development and rising pupil demand. The nursery will also open with a reduced capacity of 13 places, with provision expanding in line with future growth. Construction began in March 2025 and has remained on track, with the main building structure now complete and internal work well underway. Externally, the school's sports pitches and surrounding areas are being readied for the start of the new academic year. During the visit, Aoife Brandreth MP and guests were accompanied by Ruth Cadwallader, the school's head teacher, who spoke about preparations for welcoming the first pupils this autumn. The group also heard from Graham Dixon, Senior Contracts Manager at Wynn Construction, who outlined the latest milestones and final steps towards handover to the Trust in July. Aoife Brandreth said, "It's great to see the progress at King's Moat Community Primary School. This new school is a vital part of the development, giving families access to high-quality education right on their doorstep. Getting this balance right, homes alongside vital infrastructure like a fantastic local school, is so important for building a strong community." Ruth Cadwallader, head teacher of King's Moat Community Primary School, said, "Every stage of the build brings us closer to opening our doors and welcoming our first pupils, which is incredibly exciting. King's Moat will be a warm, inclusive and forward-thinking school where children can thrive. We're delighted to have appointed a fantastic team of teaching staff, and I'm really looking forward to introducing them to the community over the coming months."
Westminster Park 80th anniversary celebrations feature Duke and Duchess. The Duke and Duchess of Westminster will be in attendance to help the 80th anniversary celebrations of a Chester Park in the family name next month. The Duke will be at Westminster Park on Saturday the 9th of May, as many clubs which use the facility will be offering free taster sessions, including mini golf to tennis and even croquet as part of the celebrations. The free event, which marks 8 decades since the Grosvenor family gifted a 999-year lease of the land off Gough Street to the community as a public park for sport and recreation, takes place from 1 to 4pm. Made possible through funding from the Duke, the event brings together the communities and clubs that use the popular green space, recognising the essential role the park has played in promoting physical and mental well-being, strengthening communities and enhancing the environment. This year also marks the 50th anniversary of the 9-hole golf course, part of Green Day Cafe and Golf, operated by Ken Moody. Ken, who is also part of the Friends of Westminster Park, which is organising the event, said the golf course is a local gem and has been a huge part of the park community for 50 years, providing a fun way for people to be active and socialise. To celebrate, we'll be offering free mini golf for juniors from 10am to 4pm and golf taster sessions for all on the 9-hole course from 1 to 4pm. We'd love people to come along, have a go, and see how welcoming the course is, whether you're picking up a club for the first time, practicing your short game, or just fancy a fun afternoon with the family. The whole event promises to be a fantastic celebration of all the benefits the park provides to Chester. We're hoping lots of people come down join in the fun and try something new. Alongside the golf, visitors will have the opportunity to try taster sessions including junior tennis, croquet and cricket nets. A marquee will feature displays from clubs, residents' associations, Chester Zoo on nature recovery, and representatives from Cheshire West and Chester Council's Green Spaces team, as well as music and refreshments. The Duke and Duchess of Westminster will attend the event, where they will meet members of the park community and unveil a commemorative plaque, as well as newly planted trees on the park's nature trails. The Friends of Westminster Park are inviting people of all ages to share photos and memories to help build a social history of the park. Images and stories can be shared via the Friends of Westminster Park Facebook page or emailed to parkhistory@macfadyen.net. That's parkhistory@macfadyen, that's MacFadyen.net. Westminster Park holds Green Flag status, an international award recognising well-managed green spaces. Amenities include nature trails, play areas, an outdoor gym, running circuits, picnic benches and a BMX track.
New pizzeria opening in Chester City Centre this summer. A new pizzeria will open in Chester City Centre this summer. Rudy's Pizza Napolitana has confirmed it will be opening at 38 Bridge Street, formerly occupied by Carluccio's, which closed earlier this year. To celebrate the opening, Rudy's is giving away 3,000 pizzas on the house. You can claim one by visiting their website at www.rudyspizza.co.uk/location/Chester. That's www.rudyspizza, that's rudyspizza.co.uk/location/Chester. The new venue will span two floors and offer over 170 covers in what will be the chain's 39th restaurant to date. Since launching in Manchester's Ancoats in 2015, Rudy's has grown into one of the UK's most popular pizzerias. Rudy's is the largest organisation in the world to be accredited by the Associazione Verace Pizza Napolitana, the international body that protects and promotes traditional Neapolitan pizza making. In 2025, Rudy's was also recognised among the world's 50 best pizzerias, ranking 23rd globally. Neil Bates of Rudy's said, "Since opening our first pizzeria in Ancoats back in 2015, the Northwest has believed in us every step of the way. Chester feels like a natural next chapter, a city with great character and an amazing food scene that we can't wait to be a part of. We're firing up the oven and can't wait to say ciao and share some pizzas with the community to celebrate." The new Rudy's Chester will generate up to 30 jobs in the local area, with a number of roles available. The award-winning employer will be holding recruitment days for both full or part-time positions to join La Familia closer to the opening date. However, applicants can still send their CV now via careers@rudyspizza.co.uk. That's careers@rudyspizza.co.uk.
UK and Mozambique musical collaboration coming to Chester. Kate Griffin and Machume Zango are set to bring their unique cross-cultural collaboration tour to Chester. The tour, which runs from May to July, will see the pair perform in various locations celebrating the universal power of traditional music. The Chester performance is scheduled for June the 5th. Kate, a UK clawhammer banjo player, and Machume, a multi-instrumentalist from Mozambique, first crossed paths virtually during the Making Tracks online residency in 2020. Despite the limitations of virtual collaboration, they found a deep creative and musical connection that has now blossomed into a vibrant new sound. This sound combines world rhythms, contemporary songwriting, and elements of their respective musical traditions. Machume, recognized as one of the new masters of timbilla, has an impressive portfolio. His lineage traces back to Zavala in Hambane province, the heart of Mozambique's timbilla tradition. He has worked in performance theatre, dance and film, and has recorded several albums with groups such as Timbilla Muzimba, Mosome Big Noise, Kubilai Khan, and Forest Jam. Kate, hailed as one of the top banjo players in the country by virtuoso Dan Walsh, has toured internationally with her Indo-folk collective Mishra. She is currently collaborating with Sufi vocalist Deepa Shakti. In 2022, Kate and Machume met in person at Maputo in Mozambique, where they recorded an EP and performed live for the first time. Their debut UK tour took place in July 2024, marking Machume's first time touring the UK. Their live shows feature Machume's range of percussion instruments, including timbilla, zitendi, mbira, and congas, along with Kate's banjo. They are supported by a trio consisting of Evan Carson on drums, Ben Evans on bass, and Ford Collier on low whistle and guitar. Their music can be listened to and downloaded from various platforms, offering a taste of their unique blend of musical traditions. For more information, contact Richard Penguin via email at mail@richardpenguin.co.uk. That's mail@richardpenguin.co.uk or richard.penguin0607@gmail.com. That's richard.penguin0607@gmail.com or call 01603 408 525. That's 01603 408 525.
Chester schoolgirl to join top circus company in Las Vegas. A schoolgirl from Chester will jet off to Las Vegas in August to pursue her dream of being a professional circus artist. Abigail Garner, 11, will meet up with award-winning USA-based professional youth circus production company Le Petit Cirque, known for the Nobel Peace Prize concert Oslo, and numerous TV shows and films such as Ellen, Wonder Woman 1984, The Greatest Showman, and Big Top Academy. Abigail's passion for gravity-defying stunts was evident from a young age when she was found by her mum, Jess, swinging from the curtains at the age of 4. She had tied them into a knot and was pretending she was on a trapeze like Zendaya in The Greatest Showman. We have a history of creativity in the family, but no one has ever joined the circus, as far as we know, said Jess. That same year, Abigail was diagnosed with joint hypermobility, which impacts multiple body systems, including affecting the stability of joints and organs. It was a specialist physiotherapist who suggested she give aerial circus skills a go. Jess added, "Unlike regular gymnastics, aerial builds joint stability and strength while working with the person's flexibility. We were very lucky to have access to coaches who understood hypermobility and had specialist training in coaching children. There are days where doing just the basics is a real challenge for Abby, so aerial circus has given Abigail a creative outlet and form of exercise that she can enjoy and thrive at whilst being safe." Her journey was celebrated by the BBC's Blue Peter, who organised a surprise for her to spend the day with Cirque du Soleil at the Royal Albert Hall. "It was the hardest secret I've ever had to keep," said Jess, "but totally worth it to see how in love she was with circus life. I knew on that day I had lost my child to the circus. I just never appreciated how quickly she would gather pace. Abigail, whose main apparatus is dance trapeze, said, "The dream is to be a professional performer with Cirque du Soleil, and everything I do is aimed at getting me one step closer to my goal. I'm so lucky to be able to train professionally in something that is my hobby. I am so proud to have been invited. It feels like all of my hard work is paying off. I will be based in Las Vegas, the entertainment capital of the world, for 1 week. We will train every day for around 7 hours, and I will have the opportunity to work with elite aerialists, casting directors, acting coaches, and other specialists in the industry. This is an excellent opportunity for me to learn, grow, and experience aerial life." Abigail has also urged others to try out aerial circus skills, saying there are some great studios in the area, including her home studio, JD Aerial Fitness. A GoFundMe page has been set up to help support her trip, with every penny going towards travel, insurance, and subsistence costs. You can also follow Abigail's journey on Instagram at Abby Upside Down. That's at Abby, ABI, Upside Down.
Chester are in the National League North playoffs. It's a case of job done for Connell Rawlinson and his Chester side. Rawlinson took the helm on an interim basis earlier this year with the task of helping the Blues climb into the National League North playoff positions, and that target has been achieved following Saturday's 0-0 draw at home to Kings Lynn Town. There were two satisfied teams at the Diva Stadium as Kings Lynn's point ensured they avoided relegation. Rawlinson told Chester FC TV, "That was the aim, to reach the playoffs, when I took over. We knew if we'd won the game, we'd probably finish fifth, and we pushed at the end of the game. As it turned out, Chester finished the campaign in seventh spot, level on points with fifth-placed Buxton and sixth-placed Scarborough. It was one where we made a change, put Connor Woodsy right back because Phil Croker was getting quite a bit of the ball. So we put a more attacking player on to try and win the game. But the aim was the playoffs. And you know, I'm over the moon that we've achieved it, because it was nearly impossible, probably, when we took over, knowing what we had to do." In their playoff eliminator, Chester will play Macclesfield, and the winners will face a trip to Kidderminster Harriers on Saturday in the semi-finals. Fylde claimed the title thanks to their 4-2 triumph at Merthyr, who missed out on a place in the playoffs themselves. Second-placed South Shields lost out 1-0 at Kidderminster, who finished the season in third place.
An Army veteran clocked speeding in a Flintshire 20-mile-per-hour zone has been allowed to keep his licence despite reaching 13 penalty points. Barry Muir of Hall Hill Crescent in Glasgow appeared at Wrexham Magistrates Court on Friday via video link for sentence. The 45-year-old had previously admitted one offence of speeding, which took place on the 14th of December 2024 at Pentre. Prosecutor Brian Robinson told the court that on the day in question, Muir was travelling at 33 miles per hour in a 20 zone, namely the B5129. Mike Pugh, defending, said the hearing marked his client's first time before a court of any description, and that due to previous points on his licence, he was liable to totting up procedures, which sees a motorist receive an automatic ban if they reach 12 or more points. As such, Muir put forward an exceptional hardship application in the hope of retaining his driving licence. The defendant explained that he works for a security and CCTV company, which is involved in multiple sites right across Scotland. A driving ban would mean losing his job, he explained, as he could not afford to employ a driver. Muir explained that prior to his current employment, he had served in the army and then as a private contractor in Iraq, which left him with PTSD. He explained that having a license was important to him personally, as getting out and about is a coping mechanism for the PTSD. But he also explained that the loss of his license would affect his partner and their children. The court granted the defendant's application and allowed him to keep his license, but handed down a £500 fine, as well as ordering him to pay a £200 victim surcharge and £65 costs. Nigel Gilkes, chair of the magistrates, told the defendant, "You're driving around on 13 points now. You have to be extremely careful."
Airbus UK has reached an agreement with the firm behind plans to build a low-carbon power station in Connah's Quay to maintain a clear flight path to Harden Airport. Uniper's plans to replace Deeside Power Station on the banks of the River Dee with a huge low-carbon plant are being evaluated and progressed by UK government as a project of national importance. The plant will be connected to the HyNet carbon capture pipeline and take up an area of 105 hectares, the equivalent of almost 263 football pitches. For the last 12 months, however, Uniper has been in negotiations with Airbus UK, as the proposed size of its chimney stacks was too tall. At 155 metres high, they extended up into the obstacle limitation zone, the protected airspace kept clear for aircraft such as the Beluga to manoeuvre, take off and land at Harden Airport. Compared to other developments in the area, the new power station will be enormous. The Flintshire Bridge stands just 118 metres tall and will be dwarfed by its new neighbour. Almost 12 months ago, in May 2025, Airbus UK at Broughton first told Uniper that it would not accept the stacks at their original height. It stated then that the maximum allowable height would be 147.69 metres. Following negotiations between the two parties, it has now been confirmed that Uniper and Airbus have agreed that the stacks on the new power station will reach a height of 145 metres. Cranes carrying out construction work on the stacks may still breach the zone, but Airbus have stated it would accept this if that work was carried out in the summer months.
A 34-year-old man has been jailed after admitting harassing his long-term partner during a barrage of abusive messages. Dean McLaren of Nantucoid, Holywell, appeared before Carnarvon Crown Court sitting before Her Honour, Judge Nicola Jones. The court heard that McLaren had pleaded guilty to harassment following an incident on the 24th of January this year involving his partner, Laura Kenworthy. Prosecutor Emmeline Downing said the couple, who have seven children together, had been in a relationship for 13 to 14 years, described as turbulent. But Miss Kenworthy had said this was the first time she had felt genuinely frightened of him. On the evening in question, Miss Kenworthy had been visiting a friend when she began receiving a number of voice notes and messages from McLean. The messages were described as mean and nasty, including insults about her appearance and accusations about her parenting. The following morning, McLean phoned her and accused her of stealing money and being unfaithful, before making threats of violence. Miss Kenworthy became so concerned she left her home. The court also heard that McLean contacted her mother, leaving a voicemail containing abusive language and threats. Although Miss Kenworthy later withdrew her support for the prosecution due to the stress of court proceedings, the case proceeded on the available evidence. McLean has 16 previous convictions for 25 offences, including a number of assaults, and in March 2025, he was given a suspended prison sentence for making threats to kill. Defending, Laura McKnightley said, "McLean had been struggling with his mental health at the time and was not taking his prescribed medication. She said he had expressed remorse and had largely complied with the previous court order." Sentencing him, Judge Jones said the messages had caused distress and included threats of violence. She noted the previous offending and the fact that the incident amounted to a domestic abuse matter. After applying credit for his guilty plea, McLean was sentenced to 4 weeks in custody, which included activation of part of his suspended sentence. He will serve half of that sentence in prison, with the remainder on licence. The judge did not impose a restraining order, citing ongoing contact between the parties and the need to allow communication regarding their children.
Hello once again, this is Michael Jones with the news from North Wales. Flintshire's last Santander branch has officially closed its doors for good. The banking firm confirmed in January that its Mould site, located on the High Street, would be closing. It is now shut as of Tuesday, April the 28th, with the Regent Street branch in Wrexham and the Foregate Street site in Chester being the other nearest permanent Santander branches available to Flintshire customers. That follows on from the other closure of the Santander branch in Holywell last August. However, Santander has reassured customers that there will still be an option to bank with them in person once the branch closes. That will be done via a Santander local pop-up site, which will be available at the Daniel Owen Centre in Mould between 9:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. every Friday from May the 8th. A spokesperson for Santander UK said, in response to a continuing and sizable shift towards customers using digital banking, we are making changes to our branches to better support our customers. Where we have announced a branch closure, we maintain a weekly in-person service for our customers in the community. We will continue to invest in both our face-to-face customer network, comprising of branches, Santander locals, banking hubs, and our increasingly popular work cafes, as well as our digital banking services, so we can be there to support our customers however they choose to bank with us. Santander added that community bankers at Santander Locals will be able to support across a range of non-cash-based transactions in line with the services offered at banking hubs. Alternatively, other banks are also still available to visit on the High Street in Mould, including Nationwide, HSBC and Principality.
Flintshire's iconic Shire Hall building will disappear from the Mould skyline next year if demolition plans go ahead. The work, planned for 2027-28, will cost Flintshire County Council £4.9 million and will clear the land for a potential future development. Since the council moved out of the building in February 2025, the disposal of the site has been held up by two key issues. Firstly, the ongoing use of the building by Newydd, Flintshire's local authority trading company that provides catering and cleaning services to schools, industrial sites and care homes across North Wales. And secondly, the heating system, which is shared between Shire Hall and Mould Law Courts. These need to be separated to ensure that after Shire Hall is knocked down, Mould Crown Court and Mould Magistrates Court continue to have functioning heating. Newydd has now moved all his staff out, and there are plans to resolve the heating issues. Work is expected to begin later this year to decentralise utilities serving the law courts from County Hall, paving the way for demolition to commence in 2027-28 as planned, said Rod Taylor, Flintshire County Council's Corporate Manager for Capital Programme and Assets. He added, the site has now been fully vacated following the recent relocation of Newydd Catering and Cleaning Services, marking an important step for the project and enabling further reductions in running costs. Work is now progressing on an updated master plan to guide the future development of the site. Shire Hall has continued to cost Flintshire County Council money since it vacated the site. A Freedom of Information request found that in the 10 months after the authority moved into its new Tidewi Sant home, it spent £403,271.61 on maintenance and utilities at its former headquarters. While that is a significant saving on the £1.2 million operating and maintenance costs it would have incurred had the council remained in the ageing building, it is a pressure on Flintshire's already stretched finances.
A Mancot man has been jailed for sexually abusing a young child and filming the abuse on his mobile phone. Ben Corns, 35, of Banks Road in Mancot, admitted 15 offences at an earlier hearing, including 4 counts of sexual assault of a child under 13 and 4 counts of assault by penetration of a child under 13. He also admitted 3 counts of possession of indecent images of children, 3 counts of taking indecent images of children, and 1 count of showing indecent images of children. Catherine Elvin, prosecuting, told the court that the offending came to light after Corns showed a work colleague a video involving children during a works night out in December 2025. The colleague, who was commended by the judge for contacting police, reported the matter, and officers then attended Corns' address. Charlotte Cooper, defending, said Corns had admitted the offence at the first opportunity and accepted that the custody threshold was passed. She said his guilty pleas were his most meaningful mitigation. Sentencing. Judge Rowlands jailed Corns for 21 years, made up of a 16-year custodial term and a 5-year extended licence period. The judge said Corns had shown little genuine remorse or insight and rejected his claim that his offending was linked to cocaine use. He added, "The material found on Corns' phone showed a long-standing interest in the sexual abuse of young children. Corns was assessed as posing a high risk of serious harm to children, and the judge found him to be a dangerous offender. He must serve at least 2/3 of the custodial term before he could be considered for release by the parole board, and release will not be automatic." Corns was also given an indefinite sexual harm prevention order and must sign the sex offenders register for life.
Council has said urgent action will be taken over sheep damaging graves at a Flintshire cemetery. Over the last couple of years, sheep from nearby fields have been regularly entering Hollywell Cemetery. They've been trampling over graves and eating flowers put down by family members. David Pearson, who lost his wife Paula to cancer 13 years ago, described the matter as extremely upsetting. "It's happened repeatedly over the last couple of years," he said, "sometimes just days apart. They're just trampling over all of the graves, destroying the flowers, eating the flowers, and leaving a mess behind. She deserves better than having her grave trampled on." Flintshire Council has apologised to those affected and has pledged to take action as a matter of urgency. Hollywell Town Councillor Daniel Thomas said residents are raising urgent concerns after sheep have repeatedly entered Hollywell Cemetery, causing damage to graves by eating flowers and knocking over or breaking ornaments. "Many people have come to me to express their distress, as their loved ones are laid to rest there and the site is being left in a disrespectful state. I believe that Pennyball Hill is currently the only access route into Hollywell without a cattle grid, making it easier for animals to stray into the area." With emotions running high and frustration growing, residents are calling for immediate action to prevent further damage and restore dignity to the cemetery. Katie Wilby, lead member for Street Scene at Flintshire Council, said designs for a cattle grid to prevent the sheep from wandering down from their nearby grazing land are now complete, and the council will be working with the livestock owner to install the grid as a matter of urgency. "We sincerely apologise to those affected and thank everyone for their continued patience and understanding. We hope this resolution will prevent any recurrence."
Gardeners are being invited to pick up something special this spring as a popular plant fair returns to a new, larger venue in Hollywell. The Hardy Plant Society Clwyd Group will host its annual plant fair at Hollywell Leisure Centre on Sunday, May the 17th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. bringing together a range of specialist nurseries and plant experts. The event, which has previously been held at a smaller venue, is moving to the Leisure Centre Sports Hall for the first time, offering more space for visitors to browse. Chair and Programme Secretary Christine Price-Morris said the new location would make a big difference. "We've got the whole of the sports hall and there's plenty of room for people to walk around," she said. "It's a fantastic venue and much better for functions like this. There's also disabled access and we've had wheelchair visitors before." Visitors can expect a wide variety of plants, depending on what each nursery brings on the day. There will be, for example, rare and unfamiliar plants, annuals and perennials, bedding and vegetable plants, acers, ferns, hostas, grasses, succulents, and more, Christine said. It depends what the nurseries bring. Among those attending will be growers from across the region, including Rosemead from Holt, Chicken Street Plants from Oswestry, Woodfield Nursery from Chester, ABC&S Nursery from St Asaph, and Maxine's Plants from Conwy, alongside Gary the Gardener from Mostyn and the HPS Clwyd stall. Christine said the fair has been running since around 2007 and continues to attract both regular visitors and new faces. "The same nurseries come back every year because they enjoy talking to the public and giving advice," she said. "It's a great place to come." As well as the range of plants on offer, visitors will have the chance to speak directly with experienced growers. The event is free to attend, with free parking available on site. Food and drinks will also be available from Rosie's Cafe, serving breakfast baps and refreshments throughout the day.
A popular soft play centre in Flintshire has closed with immediate effect and is up for sale. Banana Bends, located in Flint, announced on Tuesday the 28th of April via social media that they were now closed until further notice. When trying to access the Banana Bends Flint website, you are now greeted with a message that says, "It is with a heavy heart that we have to announce the closure of Banana Bends Flint until further notice. All parties and bookings will be contacted by Banana Bends in Wrexham, which is unimpacted." Since those initial posts, the company has confirmed that they are looking to sell its assets. On a different social media post, which was posted on the 29th of April, they say, "Soft play business opportunity in Flint. We are exploring the sale of the assets of our fully fitted soft play centre, creating an excellent opportunity for a new operator to step in and run their own family entertainment business. The site is purpose-built and includes a large soft play structure, party rooms, cafe area, commercial kitchen and all supporting infrastructure, ready to operate. We've already had strong interest and we are now inviting further inquiries from serious parties. Our priority is to find the right operator who can continue serving the local community and ideally support the existing jobs. The company's Wrexham branch opened its doors in 2019 and parents were delighted when it opened up in Flint in March of last year.
More than £540,000 in Welsh Government fines against Flintshire County Council for missing recycling targets have been dropped after the council switched to three weekly black bin collections. The fines total £356,279 for 2022-23 and £184,340 for 2023-24. They had been imposed by Welsh Government after Flintshire fell short of statutory recycling targets in those years. A separate £663,000 infraction fine relating to 2021-22 was dismissed earlier. The Council attributed the improvement to its new resource and waste strategy for 2024-2030 and the move to three weekly collections of non-recyclable black bin waste in April 2025. Other changes included a new visible waste process at Flinch's household recycling centres and ongoing work to raise awareness of recycling. Early indications suggest the council has achieved a statutory 70% recycling target for 2025-26, up from 63% the year before, although final figures are still subject to verification. Flinch is also hopeful that a further fine for missing the 2024-25 target, potentially worth around £960,000 based on Welsh Government's £200 per tonne infraction rate, will also be waived if the 70% rate is confirmed. Katie Wilby, Flintshire County Council's Chief Officer for Street Scene and Transportation, said, "We are pleased that the significant progress made in our recycling performance across Flintshire has been recognised by Welsh Government through removal of these fines." She added, "Our focus has been on delivering meaningful long-term change to move Flintshire towards a more circular economy. While there is still work to do, these results demonstrate the positive impact of the changes we have made and the efforts of our communities, and we would like to thank residents for their ongoing support."
Rachel Candy has asked us to share some information with you about events, activities and social groups that are going on in May. So, first of all, on Tuesdays, there's a weekly gym session in partnership between Brio Leisure and Vision Support. They have a friendly and dedicated volunteer who's ready to offer assistance and is a qualified personal trainer. They can help guide you through your workout and ensure your safety at all times. The sessions are free if you have Brio Leisure gym membership, or you can pay on the day. They happen every Tuesday, 12:30 to 1:30, at Brio Leisure Centre, Northgate Arena. Now, the next session will be on the 12th of May, when Brio Leisure Centre has reopened its doors, and then they'll be every Tuesday. Then on Wednesdays, Vision Support Chester Walking Group. That's a weekly walking group around Chester with a friendly group. Join us for a lovely walk around the Chester area before we stop off for a tea or coffee at a local cafe. If one-to-one support is required, we would ask you to bring a friend or family member. That's every Friday from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. You start at the Brio Leisure Centre, Northgate Arena, and you can find out more information by contacting Rachel, and I'll give you her details at the end of the reading. On Thursdays, the Walled City 6 Bowls Social and Activity Group meet every Thursday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St Werburgh's Parish Centre, Brook Street, Chester, CH1 3DZ. Then, monthly social activities. On Tuesday the 5th of May, now I know this may be too late for those of you who get the memory sticks, but this happens every month, so you would be able to join the one in June. So Tuesday the 5th of May, Social Circle Online Meetup. This is an online and dial-in group for adults with a vision impairment across North Wales and Cheshire. Each month they have a different topic. It's hosted on Microsoft Teams. There's an option to join online or dial yourself in, and it runs from 10 to 11 on a Tuesday morning. Then on Wednesday the 13th of May, Chester Brew Crew. This is a monthly cafe meetup. Join us for a lovely morning talking and getting to know like-minded people. 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month at the Wesley Church Centre, St John Street, Chester, CH1 1DA. And then on Tuesday, the 26th of May, we have the Vision Support Audio Described Cinema Session. May's film is The Sheep Detectives. And the synopsis is, every night a shepherd reads aloud a murder mystery, pretending his sheep can understand. When he's found dead, the sheep realise at once that it was a murder, and they think they know everything about how to go about solving it. So, Sheep Detectives, the film is 1 hour 49 minutes long, £6, free for carers and companions, Story House, Hunter Street, Chester, CH1 2AR, on Tuesday the 26th of May at 11 a.m. And then Friday the 29th of May, the friendly golf session at 4 Golf Chester Driving Range. Working with our partners at England and Wales Blind Golf, we have the unique opportunity to offer people a chance to come along to a golf driving range for the next several months. Whether you are new to golf or a seasoned golfer, come along and have a swing. We will have pros on hand to help you out. And that's Friday the 29th of May from 10:30 a.m. until 12 noon at 4 Golf, Sealand Road, Sealand, Chester, CH16BP. Now, for more information or to book your place on any of the events that I've mentioned, please contact Rachel, the Community Engagement Coordinator. You can either email rcandy@visionsupport.org.uk. So that's rcandy, all one word, at visionsupport.org.uk, or you can call 07595 412 178. So that's 07595 412 178. And finally, we've been asked to share details of an upcoming summer flower arranging event. So Vision Support say, join us for a friendly and creative flower arranging session designed especially for people with a vision impairment. Whether you're new to flower arranging or simply enjoy getting creative, this welcoming hands-on class is a wonderful opportunity to try something different, learn new skills, and connect with others in a relaxed and supportive environment. We are delighted that the fantastic Thistle and Thyme, or Thistle and Thyme, will be hosting this session and guiding you through the process step by step. Now, this is on Friday, the 5th of June, from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. at Chester Picture House, Unit 10, Hunter Street, Chester, CH12AR. And they say, what to expect? A supportive, accessible flower arranging class, guidance from an experienced florist, a chance to socialise and meet others, a beautiful arrangement to take home, and a light snack is included. Now, the ticket price is £10 per person, and that includes all materials and refreshments. You need to book to secure your place, and spaces are limited, so early booking is recommended. And if you'd like to book onto this flower arranging session on the 5th of June at Chester Picture House, you need to ring 01244 478910. So that's 01244 478910.
A day in the life of young farmer Harriet Cowan. Harriet Cowan, 25, who became the star of the Jeremy Clarkson's programme Clarkson's Farm, grew up working on her family's farm in Belper in Derbyshire. She was juggling her work as a farmer and a community nurse when she found fame on the latest series of Clarkson's Farm. Her no-nonsense dealings with Jeremy Clarkson have been credited with sparking interest in agriculture as a Gen Z career choice. Now a full-time farmer, she is in the process of buying a holding with her partner James Booth. They live near Belper. She says, we've just finished lambing, which plays havoc with my sleep. I go to bed at 10 p.m, but I'm up at 12, 2 and 4, checking the cameras to see if there are any new arrivals. If there are, I throw on my bib and brace and my wellies and I go down to the sheds and put the lamb in a pen, make sure it's had a drink, and I go back to bed. I finally get up at 6, I slap my face on, do my hair, and I'm ready for a proper day's work. I'm sure some people see me with my nails and lashes and wonder what I'm doing on a farm. There's this thing about farmers' wives being, you know, a bit rough and ready. I never agreed with that and decided to take a stand. Being a bit glamorous and working on a farm aren't mutually exclusive. Being with James, someone who's used to farming, makes life much simpler. I've dated lads who couldn't understand why it wasn't possible to go on holiday when we're getting the sheep ready for market. I have breakfast at 10, Weetabix and a cup of tea. Then I might be out on the tractor till lunch, muck spreading. Driving a tractor is one of those things that blokes think girls can't do, but but I've been driving a tractor since I was 12 and I took my test at 16. I don't mind getting my hands dirty. When I'm baling hay, I might be 3 or 4 miles from the farm, so if one of the shear bolts snaps off, I have to fix it myself. If a bloke thinks he knows better than me and starts talking rubbish, I'll tell him so. When I was on Clarkson's farm, telling Jeremy what I thought, that was the real me. It wasn't put on for the cameras. I was doing community nursing full time when I got offered the telly thing. I studied long and hard and I got into a lot of debt for nursing. There was a period where I thought I could do both, but when I was doing home visits, some of the patients started recognising me. I'm trying to take their blood pressure and all they want to know about is me sitting behind Alison Hammond at the National TV Awards. Being on that show led to other things and it wasn't long before I was earning more than I was with my nursing. I'm young enough to go back to it, but my granddad was a farmer, my dad's a farmer, and I was brought up on a farm. It was too good an opportunity to miss. There will hopefully be more telly, but the big thing is that me and James are looking to buy our own farm. At the moment, I work on my family's farm, plus I do any freelance work that I can pick up. I'll have a sandwich at about 1, and then it's back at work. It's hard work, but my body's used to it. I had a nastyish accident earlier this year. A log fell out of the log splitter and landed on my finger, taking the top of it off. I won't have a real nail on there, but I haven't got one on the finger next to it either. A sheep pulled that one off. When you're working with animals day after day, you get to know them. Taking them to market and knowing what will happen is never something that I look forward to. My dad is a no-nonsense bloke, but I've seen him with a tear in his eye. People tell me that being on the telly has got more young people, especially girls, interested in farming. But British farmers aren't getting support, so there aren't that many jobs. Brexit should have made things better for farmers, but we're still importing far too much as it's cheaper. We could be self-sufficient in far more foods, but we have to get away from the idea of everything costing next to nothing. I'm not often home before 9 at this time of year. On a rare night out, we go to the Young Farmers Do in Matlock. No getting drunk, though. A half of cider, a packet of crisps, and then home in a shower to get rid of the muck and the manure and the birthing juices. And I'm asleep before my head hits the pillow. This was adapted from an article in the Sunday Times magazine of Sunday, the 19th of April, 2026.
Weekend washers may get cheaper bills. It's a familiar sight on Sunday nights across the UK. Parents puffing away, folding fresh school clothes for the week ahead. The good news is that families who do their laundry and run other appliances over the weekend could soon be rewarded with cheaper or even free electricity. Why? In summer, sunny weather generates more solar power. At the same time, we tend to use less electricity than in winter. A scheme run by the National Energy System Operator, NESO, N-E-S-O, aims to stop this extra electricity going to waste. The Demand Flexibility Services encourages households to use washing machines and dishwashers at certain times, such as weekends or bank holidays. Those who do will be offered lower prices or rewards by their energy suppliers. A turning point for the planet, we might say. Well, last year was the UK's sunniest year on record, and more solar roof panels were installed than ever before. A new report by Bloomberg suggests that 2025 may have been the first year on record in which global greenhouse gas emissions fell, with renewable energy on the rise.
Broadcaster Naga Munchetti talks about her life. Broadcaster Naga Munchetti, 51, grew up in London. She joined the BBC in 2008 and now presents BBC Breakfast and BBC Radio 5 Live's mid-morning programme. Her book, It's Probably Nothing, is out now. She lives in Hertfordshire with her husband, James Haggar. She says, "These are scary times. I'm frightened because of what is happening in the world. Can you imagine how disgusted the veterans must be with us all, with these wars? They fought so we wouldn't have to." Scammers are smart, conniving, manipulative, wicked people. A photo of my head was put on a naked body and used as clickbait to drag people into a scam site. I wasn't upset that my face was on a naked body because I knew it was a fake photo, but the fact that it was being used to lure people into being scammed made me so mad. I am outraged and furious. I have broken news of wars too many times to count, and too many times than I would ever have wanted to. You become conditioned to accept extreme pain with adenomyosis. She suffers from the womb condition. I have probably got endometriosis as well. If you're curled up on the floor, screaming, sweating, flooding, passing out and vomiting, that is debilitating. But you end up normalising that pain. It can come at any time, but you put it in a box and you get on with your job. That's what most women do when they're in pain. There is a lot of hate speech against various groups at the moment. I was having a conversation with a taxi driver from Albania. He said every time someone gets in his car and they find out that he's Albanian, there's a comment about him being a criminal. We talked about how social media amplifies this and how he's sick as being seen as a stereotype. Both my parents came here in the 70s when racism was really common. Attacks on people of colour were common. They would witness them and they didn't want that happening to us. Parents want to protect their children. So the idea was, don't make yourself too big or too loud. Fit in and you'll be fine. And make sure you're educated, because then even if people are looking down on you because of your accent or money or class or because you're a different colour, you will always be able to articulate your arguments. People find the news overwhelming and scary. I understand this, and that they turn away from the news at times. But it's sad that turning away from news seems to equal turning away from understanding and learning, and that is amplifying our differences. I block a lot of people on social media. Someone commented on my Instagram post about giving blood, and they said, "Do they accept Indian blood?" If it looks like a message is going to be abusive, I don't read it. If it's some fool shouting into the ether, well, let them. It's not my job to change their views. People are deciding, you're either with me or you're not, and it feels like we're unlearning how to disagree agreeably with each other. That is frightening. The way we're interacting with other people feels so tense. When my mum cooked at home, she didn't want us smelling of food. In those days, there were phrases like, you smell like curry, or you stink like the curry shop. So when we came home from school, we would always have to change straight out of our uniforms. People have said to me that I'm denying my mum the opportunity to have a grandchild, and that that is wicked. But my mum just wants me to be happy, even if that means not having children. It was a joint decision between my husband and me. It felt like being British was eating British food. I'd worry if my friends came over. I'd say, I don't want them to have curry. And my mum would make beef burgers or fish fingers and egg and chips. I never wanted to learn how to cook Indian food. If I were to take a packed lunch now, I'd be taking samosas and curry and bhajis. The stinkier and more flavoursome, the better. I have no shame about that now. I'm very proud of my heritage and my food. I use my platform to shout about things that I think are wrong. You hope that you can bring about change. I get messages from women who say, I read your book and I've just booked a doctor's appointment. I feel it's a massive achievement to have helped someone. Naga Munchetti's book, It's Probably Nothing, Critical Conversations on the Women's Health Crisis, is now available as an audiobook with a running time of 11 hours and 33 minutes. This was adapted from an article in the Times magazine of Saturday, the 18th of April, 2026.
House Sparrow is winner. The results of this year's RSPB Big Garden Bird Watch have revealed that the house sparrow holds the top spot once again. A whopping 650,279 people took part in the world's largest garden wildlife survey, counting more than 9 million birds from over 80 species. The house sparrow was spotted the most across the UK, followed by the blue tit, and then the starling, wood pigeon and blackbird. Sadly, the greenfinch continues to be a rare sighting, with the species seeing a huge 67% decline in average numbers recorded since the survey began in 1979. The RSPB has now shared some tips on how we can protect birds like the greenfinch and keep all of their feathered friends as healthy as possible. And the RSPB's tips are, from the 1st of May to the 31st of October, stop filling your bird feeders with seed and peanuts to prevent too many birds gathering in one place. It's okay to keep offering small amounts of mealworms, fat balls, or suet year round. Also, clean and move your bird feeders weekly. Also, change water daily. Also, stop using flat surfaced feeders or bird tables to avoid disease spreading. And also, feature bird-friendly plants in your garden, such as sunflowers, teasels, and ivy.
Historian and broadcaster Simon Sharma's cultural favourites. Simon Sharma, 81, was born and raised in London. He was awarded a starred first for history from the University of Cambridge. He then taught there and at the University of Oxford before publishing his first history book in 1977. He has since published another 19 books and multiple series for the BBC. In 2018, he was knighted in the Queen's Birthday Honours List. He says, "My favourite book is an easy one, War and Peace by Leo Tolstoy. I first read it 60 years ago and I've read it 7 times since. All of human life and an unforgettable wolf are in its pages, which you don't so much read as inhabit. Everything and everyone being so immediate and vivid. No film or TV version comes close to the book, so don't even bother. Runner-up would be Anna Karenina, and Tolstoy's short stories are wonderful too, especially Master and Man. The book I'm reading now is Mansfield Park, but I don't think it's very good, and I say this as a Jane Austen fan. Persuasion is my favourite by her, but this one, though, has a ploddingly predictable plot, dull two-dimensional characters, except the wicked Mary Crawford, and a heroine of numbingly relentless virtue. The book I wish I'd written was Joseph Heller's Catch-22. Comic genius is the hardest to pull off, and somewhere inside its gales of absurdity is something dark and serious. My favourite play was Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. I've had a terrible crush on Beatrice from that play for half a century at least. Perfect casting for that play that never happened would have been Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn. Maybe one day artificial intelligence could deliver that for us. My favourite piece of music is a tough choice for me. It's a tie between Beethoven's Fourth Symphony and his Fourth Piano Concerto. An honourable mention is the presto from Bach's Sonata in G Minor for solo violin, especially when performed by the brilliant Rachel Podger. And then there's Wild as the Wind, sung by David Bowie. The lyric that I wish I'd written is Tom Waits' Step Right Up. It's a song made up entirely of infomercials and Carney Barker's come-ons, though with touches of the Bible. Things like, "The large print giveth and the small print taketh away." The song that saved me was the Sex Pistols' Holidays in the Sun. I was trapped at a Hogmanay party on a remote Hebridean island in a damp and draughty lordly manor house, surrounded by sheep and dreading the upcoming kiltie dancing. That noise came through an offshore pirate radio and it felt like liberation. Who were these people, the Sex Pistols? But thank you, Sid and Johnny, an escape hatch opened. The instrument I played was the clarinet, although not very well. I'm not sure Akabilk would have recognised it as actually playing. The instrument I wish I'd learnt was the violin. I'm Jewish. The music that cheers me up is Teenage Kicks by The Undertones and the overture to Beethoven's Fidelio, Dizzy Gillespie's performance of the bossa nova No More Blues at the Juan Le Pan Jazz Festival. I saw him with the sound of kids playing in the shallows, and it does what it says on the tin. And obviously, Ian Dury's Reasons to be Cheerful, Part 3. The place I feel happiest is in the company of our four grandchildren, sweet riot and such cleverness already. My guiltiest cultural pleasure is whistling musicals in the shower. If I was having a fantasy dinner party, I'd invite the poet John Donne, Colette, Dorothy Parker, Robert Shaw, who was Quint in Jaws, Henry VIII in A Man for All Seasons, and Baddy Nash from Russia with Love, but also a terrific novelist and a terrific drunk, so a high-risk guest. We'd need Eartha Kitt to sort him out and Tom Stoppard because I miss him a lot. I wouldn't play any music because why would I want anything playing while that lot shot the breeze? The play I'm looking forward to is the National Theatre revival of Les Liaisons Dangereuses, another favourite novel. Leslie Manville as the Marquise de Merteuil is likely to make Glenn Close look like Mary Poppins. Simon Sharma's books, A History of Britain, Volumes 1, 2 and 3, are available as audiobooks narrated by Stephen Thorne. This was adapted from an article in the Saturday Review of the Times of Saturday, April the 11th, 2026.
Turning poop into pennies. A boy in Scotland is turning doggy doo into dough by starting his own dog poo picking business. Leitham Bisland from Creef has launched Doggy Doo Doo, a service that offers local dung dodging customers one-off scooping sessions as well as weekly visits. It's not to be sniffed at, as he generously gives a share of his profits to PADS, a Perthshire dog charity. Now an expert on the brown stuff, he told the BBC, this might come as a shock, but the smallest dogs, like Chihuahuas, are probably the poos I don't like picking up the most. They're so hard to find, especially if there's tall grass in your lawn. The 13-year-old also picks litter and carries grass seed to repair damaged lawns. He gets through his mucky task by donning his headphones and listening to his favourite music.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, Roger here with another quiz. 10 questions, thinking caps on, and away we go. Question 1, half a point each for these. How old are Prince William and Kate? How old is Prince William and how old is Kate? Question 2, who was Lord Haw Haw? Question 3, Joe Biden was the second Catholic president of the United States. Who was the first? Question 4. Who was the first winner of the popular TV series Strictly Come Dancing? He was already well known for something else at the time. Question 5. Who was the second official James Bond? So we're not counting David Niven in a fly-off version of Casino Royale. We're talking about the mainstream James Bonds. The first, of course, was Sean Connery. Who was the second? Question 6. Who succeeded Winston Churchill as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom after the end of the war, 1945. Question 7. Which Saints' Day do we commemorate on December the 26th? December the 26th. Question 8. In which ocean is Christmas Island located? Christmas Island, where it received the bomb tests, atomic bomb tests. Question 9. What are the opening words of the song Winter Wonderland? And finally, question 10. When was the charity single Do They Know It's Christmas first released? It was in Christmas in 19... something. There we go. Hello, Roger back again with the answers to our general knowledge quiz. Question one was, how old are Prince William and Princess Kate, the royals? And the answer to that is they're both 43, although Kate is marginally the elder of the two of them by a few months. Question two, who was Lord Haw-Haw? Well, Lord Haw-Haw was the mocking name given to him by the Brits for William Joyce, who was a traitor of the First Order, broadcasting Germany Calling and spouting destabilising rubbish on behalf of the Germans during World War II. Question three. If Joe Biden was the second Catholic president of the United States, who was the first? Well, that was John F. Kennedy. Question four. The first winner of Strictly Come Dancing was newsreader Natasha Kaplinsky. Natasha Kaplinsky, who moved on in life and is now, at the time of this recording, the head of the British Board of Film Censors, or whatever its current name is. Question five. Who was the second official James Bond, who was also the shortest lived? And that was George Lazenby. George Lazenby. Question six. Who succeeded Winston Churchill as Prime Minister of the UK in 1945? That was Clement Attlee. Clem Attlee. Question seven. Which Saint's Day did we celebrate on December the 26th? That was Saint Stephen. Question eight. On which ocean is Christmas Island? It is in the Indian Ocean. The opening words, number nine, opening words of Winter Wonderland were...